Hillcrest is heading over to the Holy Land. That is January 15th to the 24th, 2019. So that's coming up shortly here. In July, we will start our meetings for that, for those that are attending. If you are thinking about it and you have not signed up, you want to not delay, okay? Let me know if you're just thinking about it. But we want to be sure that we reserve you a spot if need be. These brochures that tell you all about it and have my pretty picture on there are at the Welcome Center. Give you all the information, costs, those kinds of things. If you'd like to meet with me during the week or in some evening or privately to kind of talk through what it is we'll be seeing, I'll tell you this. If you've never been before, even if you have been before, but if you've never been before, it will transform the way that you see the scriptures, the way that you understand your faith. It is like, you know, the scripture has four gospels. This is like the fifth gospel in many ways in the way that you would understand Jesus in this. Also, I think it kind of moves you from that idea of kind of a black and white reading of the Bible to a full color version. When you read the text and you can actually remember seeing that, smelling that, and even tasting these things in the scriptures. So I don't want you to miss out. We've got quite a few Hillcresters that are going. And so if you're even considering it, let me know. That way we can talk about it and try and move you from the I'm not sure to I am doing this thing. So we are in our final week of the I Quit series. And through this series, we have been trying to challenge you to quit certain things that ultimately I think will make your life better, but really my main motivation is it will help you grow in your faith if you can quit a few things along the way. The very first week we talked about that we needed to quit complaining. And many times when we're complaining and we're focused on the negative all the time, we start to see the negative in everything. And so my challenge to you in that first week was to move from complaining to thankfulness. So in a situation, if you feel like you're complaining about it, maybe you're going to do that, but then find the things that you're thankful in that as well. And when you start looking that way at it instead of just the negatives, that can kind of help us as we go through that. Last week, we talked about quitting fear. And the challenge that I put forth for you, or maybe two truths about fear that I kind of threw out last week, is that fear will reveal the areas that you are most concerned about or that are the most important to you. The things that you're fearful about losing or the things that you're fearful about are the things that have a lot of value to you. But the flip side of that is it also that also reveals the places where you don't trust God. The things that you fear are also the places that you don't trust God. And so last week we talked about that. So if you've missed either of those, you can certainly catch those online. Through the website, we can kind of get all of our past messages there. But today, I want to talk a little bit about that I want to encourage you at least to quit comparing. Now I know when I say that you're like, maybe we should have just stayed home for pancakes. I mean, comparing, come on, how bad can that be? I want to challenge you a little bit today that I realize there are some areas of comparing that maybe are beneficial for us even, but that the kind of comparing that I think has a destructive nature to it is something that we probably all do, and I want to give you some reasons or some aspects of this comparing idea that is pretty difficult in our relationship with God. Again, the hope that you have a better life, but also that you're growing in your faith, and that comparing can get in the way of some of that. Every one of us compares. If you look at the things that most people compare, there would be a few different ones maybe that you would put on that list. The first one, of course, being possessions, right? We all compare possessions. Like, you know, who has what? Do you have a better car or a better house? And we compare ourselves with other people. Who has this? Who has that? You go over to somebody's house and you're looking at their house and you're trying your best just to think, you know, oh, I'm just been invited over. It's a nice house. But you're looking at it in comparison to yours. Maybe not some kind of malice or negative kind of a thing, but you can't help but compare everywhere you go. And possessions is one of those things that we compare. You know, how big is your bank account versus somebody else's bank account or whatever it might be. What your possessions are, we compare those things. So aside from possessions, maybe the next we might look at is appearance. You know, how do you look compared to somebody else? The plastic surgery area of the medical field is growing in quadruply every year because people are getting more and more comfortable going under the knife to change their appearance. Now, some of that might be because the techniques are better. You don't maybe look as freakish, certain things that you have done. But it is becoming culturally more okay to say, I don't like what I have, and I want to do something different. How do you know what you have isn't okay? Through comparing, right? You're comparing it with others. You're saying, you know, my this or that isn't as good as this or that. We do it with our clothing. You know, you go out and you buy certain clothes, you're trying to look a certain way, and you're comparing yourself with others. So your appearance is a big part of it. Go to the gym. And you go to a gym, that is like a big, like, compare fest, right? The people, they go there, and, like, some people are, like, staring at their biceps the whole time, you know? And then the other guy's lifting weights, looking at that guy's biceps, you know? Like, there's comparing always going on. You know, I wish I looked like that. I wish I looked like that. I wish I had that body part, and then I wish I had that body part, and I wish I had that body part. Like, I just want to be a Frankenstein of all that stuff, you know? All the parts that I want, put them together, and that's what I want. We compare when it comes to our appearance. We also compare when it comes to performance. How are we performing? How are you performing versus somebody else at your job? How are you doing performing as a parent? Are you as good of a parent as somebody else is a parent? And performance is a big piece of our comparing as well. So we care about the possessions we have. We care about our appearance. We compare that. We compare our performance. And the last one I'd kind of throw at you is we compare circumstances. Now, what do I mean by that? Like, you want to be married, but you're not. And you're comparing that with other people that are married. Why can't I get married? You know, I'm making a comparison in circumstances. You want to have kids. Maybe you can't have kids. You want to date, but you don't have a boyfriend or you don't have a girlfriend. You want to be engaged, but your boyfriend or girlfriend just keeps dragging their feet, whatever it might be. We compare our circumstances against other things. When you go to a high school reunion, if you've ever put yourself through that torture, when you go to the high school reunion, the only purpose of it is to compare, right? So you were most likely to what? Because I don't think you did do well, right? Or it's like, you know, just the first questions that get asked of you. What do you do? They're looking to be impressed. So you might as well just give them something really impressive. Oh, I'm the CEO of Procter & Gamble. They don't know who the CEO of Procter & Gamble is. And by the time they figure it out, you're gone anyways. That's probably bad advice from a pastor. Just thought of that. No lying. Is there value to comparing? Okay, there's some value to comparing. But just like many things, there's this weird kind of line that you can cross where it goes from maybe something that can be helpful in your journey versus something that is harmful in your journey. I'm going to focus on the harmful, but there is some benefits to comparing. For example, take the sports world. For many years, the 1 mile run had a line. Nobody could get as fast as this particular time. And all of a sudden, finally, one day, it wasn't all of a sudden, years and years of trying, all of a sudden someone breaks that time. And you know what happens immediately afterwards? You think like that guy's gonna hold it for like the next 50 years. Everybody breaks it. It almost seems like, why was there a barrier? Everybody breaks it. You know why? Because somebody broke it and it becomes possible. And once something becomes possible, then you're able to do things that you didn't think you were able to before. Like in the world that I follow, which is motocross and supercross, well, some of these stunt guys on motorcycles, they had been trying for years to do a backflip in the air on a motorcycle, which, I mean, less brain cells to even try that. But I like watching it. And they would try and try and try, and nobody could do it. And it was, again, it was one of these things, this will never happen. People would come on that would scientifically prove how it is not possible for this to happen. Finally, one day, some moron pulled it off on real dirt where he could have just broke his neck and been paralyzed for his life. He tried it, and he did it. And after that, everybody's doing backflips. Now they do double backflips. Not only do they do double backflips, but they do a backflip where it's not just the bike going over. The bike goes up, and then it starts going sideways like a helicopter and then flipping around, and the guy, like, you know, drinks some champagne in the air, and then they land it. But it's because once it became possible, everybody thought, oh, it is possible. I think it's beneficial in some ways to look in life and say, there are things that people are accomplishing that I didn't think I could accomplish, and I'm challenged by that, you know? That's an encouraging way, I think. But the other side of that coin can be just as dangerous, right? Because what if nobody's able to do it? Then you're going to tell yourself, I can't do it, because nobody does it. So you can also get stuck in this status quo with that kind of comparing. So though some comparing, I get it, can stretch us a little bit and we can do better. But sometimes that exact same thought and philosophy on comparing can also limit us, because you won't be able to accomplish something that maybe you are able to, because you assume because nobody else is doing it, nobody else is able to do it, that you're not able to do it. So comparing can be some benefit to us at times. But the kind of comparing that I want to talk about today is a kind of comparing that can be destructive. And it's the kind of comparing that matches up with a scorecard inside you. Can you identify that scorecard of comparing? Where you look at others and you say, I wish I this and I wish I that. And then what you do in return is you're down on what you're about and what you're doing. It's not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not wise enough. I don't have enough of this, enough of that. I wish I had what I don't have. That kind of comparing can be very destructive to us as people. And what I want to share with you today is something that I realize that as I say it outright, it's going to seem a little over the top. But I'm going to give you three ways that this is true. And the third one I hope will really sink in for you. But it's that God hates it when we compare. Yeah, that's a strong word. My mom always told me, don't say hate. God hates it when we compare, despises it. One of the deepest kinds of despising of something. He hates it when we compare. So let me give you three ways or reasons why God hates it when we compare. The first one that I would say is that comparison ends up being the death of contentment. Okay? When we compare, it kills, it removes, it eliminates this content feeling that we have, because we don't have what we want. You know, we look out there and we're not content. So we start to compare, and as we compare and we see what others have and we don't have it, we lose contentment. Contentment is being okay where you're at, wherever you're at. You know, Paul in the scripture said, you know, no matter good or bad, you know, I'm content with where I'm at. You know, whether he's hungry or whether he's full, whether he's hot or whether he's cold, he has a contentment that he's okay where he's at. But when we start to compare, comparison will kill that contentment in us that God has wants us to live in. Wants us to live in this content feeling. In fact, here's a letter that Paul wrote to the church in Corinth, and he's talking about comparing. Listen to what he says here in 2 Corinthians 10:12. He says, oh, don't worry. We wouldn't dare say that we were as wonderful, that's a comparing word, as wonderful as these other men who tell you how important they are, but they are only comparing themselves with each other, using themselves as a standard of measurement. How ignorant. Paul is saying they are using each other as their place of comparison, and how limiting that is, because our comparison should be with how God wired us, how God designed us, what God has provided for us. So you and I, our comparison should be with what God is up to in our lives and not just what everybody else is doing. And so Paul is really trying to hit this home that there's a lack of contentment when we're comparing with each other. But there is a growth of contentment when our comparing is with what God has in store for us and what God is up to in us. I know this can be a little bit of an aloof idea or an aloof subject. But he wants us to be okay where we are because of who God is in our lives. Let me put it this way. When we start to compare, we are building a mirage. You know what a mirage is? It's not a hotel in Vegas. Actually, that is a mirage. A mirage is something that doesn't exist. It's you think it's there. You kind of build up that it's there. It's something desirable, I guess, in some way, but it doesn't really exist. Like, the famous one is the desert one, you know? because every one of us at one time or another in our life will get dropped off in the desert, and we will have no water, and we'll be scratching along, and all of a sudden you look out on the horizon, and what do you see? A couple of palm trees, a lake, a water source of some sort, and I think usually a hula dancer, I think. And so that, you claw your way to it just to discover it's not there. I mean, it happened to Daffy Duck, I don't know how many times. But that is a mirage. It's not there. You think it's there, and it's not there. And when we compare, we are creating mirages in our world that we think are there, that is a goal that we can attain, and it doesn't exist. Do you have a family you wish that your family was like that other family? I want you to know that family doesn't exist. It's a mirage. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I don't want to be like, oh, everybody's life is terrible. It's not. But the things that you build up that family is, that family is not. I mean, they may have concealed their problems, their troubles, their struggles, their difficulties, their failures to you, but they haven't concealed them from everybody, including themselves. People sometimes can put on a good front, or maybe it's only because you only see a little slice of that person's life, and you don't understand the bigger picture that's there. And we get this mirage that we build up to say, oh, I wish I could just be like this person, and if I just was able to be like this person, then I would have everything they have, which is wonderful. And this comparison starts, and as we compare, we start to struggle with our own contentment along the way. When we compare, we build a mirage. We decide that someone's perfect and they're not. We decide someone has it all together and they don't. 2 weeks ago, two people committed suicide that were like, this was front news kind of stuff. And there were people, as I've read what people have written about these individuals that had committed suicide, that they had written like their desire to be like these people. That they were role models for them. They were objects that they wanted to use, or kind of a roadmap to life. They said, if I could just be like this person. But if you were that person was in such despair, life wasn't even worth it. They took their own life. It's a mirage. You think it's something, but it's not. You're not walking that person's shoes. You don't know. But we build up that there's this perfect thing out there, this thing that I want to become because I see these other people living it out. But the truth is that is not the case many times. And when we do this, we become discontented with our own portion, our own position, our own place. When you start to seek the mirage of somebody else's family, you will become discontent with yours. When you start to desire your kids to be like somebody else's kids, you become discontent with your children. If you think you need to become something, do something, act a certain way, and you can't seem to perform that, but you see it in others, you become discontent with yourself. And when you start to become discontent, you obviously have lost your contentment with who you are. If you go to the gym or you open up a magazine, you look at the person on the cover, you say, I need my body to look like that. That's a mirage, right? That person doesn't even exist. That person exists because of airbrushing. But if you go to the gym and you see people working out and you see them and you're like, man, that's what I want to be. Like, here I'm seeing it, flesh and blood. Pastor Doug is wrong. That person exists. I want to be, just like that person. I would say that your challenge is that you've lost contentment with who you are. You've lost contentment with your three chins and your bat wings, all the stuff that's you. I know you're saying, like, how could you possibly be content with that? I want to challenge you on that today. That there is something amazing and beautiful about you that is not what the world continues to portray that says you're not okay. Because you have a God in heaven who says you are perfect. You are wonderfully made. And when we reject that, when we lack contentment in who we are, it means we're communicating something, maybe unintentionally, to God Himself. There are people that compare their spiritual journey to mine. You believe that? Yeah, there's people. I mean, I hear them say, boy, Pastor Doug, if I could just this like you, or oh, if I could just that like you. I'm going to challenge you guys this morning with something. Maybe think a little bit differently about me as your pastor. Do any of you know my spirituality? If you know my spirituality, raise your hands. That's the correct answer. Not a one of you do. You have no idea what my relationship with God is like, whether it even exists. I mean, this, for all you know, this could just be a job where I learn how to talk. I have this text that I teach. I've learned how to pray, just like someone can teach a salesman how to sell cars or how to sell whatever item and kind of smooze or talk about it however they want. It's a job, right? You just learn it. How could that not be the same for me? Any of you know what my prayer life is like? I mean, I do public prayer, but you can just learn that. What about privately? Do I ever pray? Do I ever read the Bible? Do I believe any of the things I'm talking about? Do I even have to believe in God to do this job?
So I sure hope so.
Well, I know nearly 10 pastors in my life that didn't. And many of those are still in the pulpit today. And their families have no clue. You see, if you're trying to match your spirituality and mine, mine could just be a mirage. Because you don't know. I mean, this summer, I celebrate 20 years here, and some of you know me all 20 years. And those of you that know me 20 years, you don't know anything about my spirituality. That's not a knock on you. That's just the truth. What we think is something sometimes isn't something. But when we just keep comparing with someone else, it just makes us discontent with who we are and what we have and what our life situation and circumstance is. And that's what we have to challenge ourselves with. So I want to encourage you, be content with your own spiritual journey, wherever it is. It's okay to be where it is. Be content with your family. Be content with your spouse. Yeah, different than others, and certainly different than those stupid movies that they play all the time. That's the worst thing about a chick flick movie. I'm not saying, like, I don't like to go to chick flick. I don't like going to them, but that's not the point. I don't mean the content of the movie and the aspect of its entertainment value. I mean what it throws out there as the image that's correct. You can't go to one of those and not come home to your husband and go, you're a loser. I mean, you don't say that, but you feel it. Because, like, man, that guy on the screen, he was amazing. He doesn't exist, right? When we throw these mirages out there, if you keep looking at everybody else's kids, you're going to be discontent with yours. And if you're discontent with your kids, who's going to take the skill sets that they have, the passions that they have, the dreams that they have, and the things that are only unique to them? Who's going to blossom those things? Because we're discontent with them, we just want them to be something different than that. Yeah, it might be different than your dream, but surprise, surprise, when God, like, created your child, he didn't, like, ask you what you wanted. And guess what? Your kids aren't even yours. They're his, and they're going to leave, and they're going to do their thing for God. You just get them for a brief window. And so, like, contentment is such a key piece of our walk with God and our understanding of these things. I want you to be content with your belly. I want you to be content with your chins and your bat wings and your back fat. I want you to be content with your moles and your pale skin. That you say, well, it's just because it's after winter time. But, you know, come August, you still look that way. And I want you to focus on this. That God made you amazing. And to stand up in the world with who you are. And let the love radiate from you as what he created. And I promise you this. You'll be as attractive as anybody else. Because it's not about the outward appearance. I mean, God said that. Specifically, I look at the heart. It's not the outward appearance, but the outside appearance that you have, he gave you. And you need to celebrate who you are and move forward in the world saying, this is who I am. I mean, yeah, I can eat less Cheetos. I get that. But for the most part, this is who I am. And I love people and I love God. And that will be attractive in the world because the world isn't that. The world is trying to put on a facade. The world is trying to create a mirage. Each one of us in some way are trying to create a mirage and fake everyone out around us. And if we could just be who we are, this is how God made me. Because when we start to compare, we lose our contentment. Second reason why God hates it when we compare is that comparison makes us prideful. Comparison makes us prideful. Now, this is kind of the other side of the comparison coin. This is when you compare so you can feel better about yourself. This is when you're in a better spot. This is when you don't have the bat wings and you look down on the people that do. Some of you not know what bat wings are? Now that I'm in my, you don't know what they are? David, it's when you hold your arms up and there's a flap of skin down here. Some of you didn't know that. Those are bat wings. Now that I'm, you know, in my upper 40s, I'm learning a whole lot about all kinds of things I didn't know existed. Seriously. Jesus tells a story about this religious leader, this kind of a pastor kind of guy, and he's praying. And while he's praying, he's doing this comparison to be prideful. And let me read it for you. It comes out of Luke chapter 18, verses 11 and 12. And Jesus said this. He said, the Pharisee, that's this religious pastor kind of guy, stood by himself. He's in the temple, like in the church, praying. He said, and he prayed this prayer. Thank you, God, that I am not a sinner like everyone else. For I don't cheat, I don't sin, I don't commit adultery, and I'm certainly not like that tax collector right there in the room. I fast twice a week, and I give you a tenth of my income. I'm going to give you some advice. If you're ever praying in a space and someone's praying a prayer like this, the best thing you can do is take about 10 steps back because lightning could strike. Okay, this is rough. Now, I get it. None of you are this arrogant when it comes to your own spirituality, your walk with God. But I want you to know that still, even though this seems really extreme, we all compare to build up our pride in our day-to-day lives. So let me point out maybe a couple ways that we might do this. When you're at the grocery store, and you know what the look is. You've got that mom, maybe it's a single mom. She's got 1, 2, 3, or 12 kids with her. And one of them, maybe more, but certainly one of them is starting to do the, we're in line with the cart and we're doing the freak out. Okay, you know it, right? And what do you say? Not out loud, hopefully, but in your own brain, you're looking and you're giving parenting advice, aren't you? You're like, your child is going to scream 8 times for a candy bar, and if you give in, you're just going to reinforce this. Be strong. And then you hear the kid ask once, and hear twice, and 3 times, and 4 times, and then finally the mom goes, fine, and she gets a candy bar, and you're like, stop, you're a terrible parent. This is going to happen again and again. We compare for the sake of us feeling better, because we had it all right, huh? Yeah, we did it perfect, raising our kids. Or, you know, there's always that person with, they have nicer stuff than you. You know, that one friend or that one person, you know, they have all the really cool stuff, but you feel okay about it because they don't have really any real friends in life. They have social awkwardness. And so, see, it's like they have stuff, but you're like, yeah, but you have this, and, you know, too bad for you. I feel better about myself because of your lack of ability to make friends. These are ways that we compare for our own pride. You know, maybe you've got a coworker that's really arrogant. You just don't get along with this coworker, and a position opens up and you both apply and they don't get it and you do. There's this sense of comparison, right? Like, both have abilities, but because you're this, you don't get it, and I do, and I feel better about myself because I got it and you didn't. That's why I feel better. I feel better that I got it and you didn't. It's not just that I got it. It's not just that you didn't. It's that I got it and you didn't. And this is this comparison that gets us into a prideful situation. I was on a road trip one time with a friend of mine. And we were kind of hungry, and we stopped at this fast food place, because that's the best when you're on a road trip, right? Especially you have to be together for 10 hours in that car. And we stop at this thing, and we're waiting in line to order our food at the window where the person says, "Is this guy's owner?" You go, "What? I'll have a hamburger." You don't know what they're saying. And we're waiting to order because there's a car in front of us, and so their window is down, and my window is down because I'm getting ready to order, and I have a roll-down window that takes forever to get down. And so the car in front someone in there is smoking. And I think like three or four at a time, okay? Just billowing out, and it's like wafting into my vehicle. I'm not a smoker, neither was my friend a smoker, so I was just kind of ignoring it because that's just life. People smoke and, you know, it's a bummer it's blowing in the car, but it won't be forever. But my friend couldn't let it go. So he starts going off on smoking. And he's like rattling statistics that aren't true. He's saying things that aren't true. He's talking about every person he's ever known that smoked has died. I mean, he is just like going off. And I'm just kind of ignoring it. And we pull up to the window and I look at he's talking so much about smoking. I didn't ask him what he wanted to order. I said, what do you want? And he says, I want a double cheeseburger with bacon, large fry, large Coke. And I look at him and I go, man, you should pick up smoking, dude. Like, you're going to die from this. But see, he's comparing to be prideful, yet he's kind of doing the same thing, just in a different area of life. And so comparing can be really dangerous for us because it can really make us prideful people. It's not that you can't be proud of what you've accomplished. Like I said, there's this fine line when it goes from being proud of what you accomplish to being proud for the sake of others. Here's a good test that I give for myself, and it's a tough one to pass. Because many times I'll say, well, I'm just proud for myself. You know, I worked hard and I'm proud of what I've accomplished. Would you be proud of what you accomplished if what you accomplished everybody else had? Or are you only proud because they don't have it? Like, would you be proud of yourself for getting a degree if everybody got a degree? That's a good way to test whether you're really proud in just your own accomplishments, you buckled down and you did it, versus you're being this so you can be prideful because others haven't. And the last one for this idea of why God hates it when we compare, certainly, contentment kills contentment. It makes us prideful. But for the last one I'd give you today, it's a comparison makes us resentful. And this is the one that I think gets to the heart of why God hates it so much. We've been talking a lot about David these last few months. And a David, young boy, anointed to become the king, but there's already a king. His name is Saul. And so as David is growing up, he is not taking on the role of king, but he's learning some things along the way. And at one point, he goes to see his brothers who are fighting out at the battlegrounds. And David ends up talking with Saul and saying, hey, I want a shot at this giant of a man named Goliath. And Saul says, okay, gives him his armor and everything. David's like, I can't wear this stuff. He says, I'm just going for it with a slingshot. And so he heads out there and he kills Goliath, all right? This is obviously amazing. And then they all kind of gather back together and they head home and they're going into town and they've got the whole military marching through town and the whole town is there and they've all come out, not only the town, but all the areas of Israel have come. And let me read to you what happens here, because Saul, the king, starts to have this comparison piece that starts to make him resentful, okay? So listen to this. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 6 through 9, it says, when the victorious Israelite army was returning home after David had killed the Philistine, women from all the towns of Israel came out to meet King Saul, and they sang and danced for joy with tambourines and cymbals. And this was their song. I don't know the tune, so I can't sing it. Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. Oh! This made Saul very angry. And if you're confused by that, Saul just tells you what it is. He says, what is this? He said, they credit David with 10,000s and me with only thousands. Next, they'll be making him their king. Little did he know. So from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David, which eventually ended up that Saul many times tried to take David's life. So, Saul was resentful of what? What's Saul resentful of? David? David's accomplishment, right? Yeah, Saul is resentful of David's accomplishment. If you read that, that's what you're going to get. And if that's what you understand when you read that text, that's probably okay, but it's wrong. Saul is resentful that he's not getting it. He's resentful that David is getting accolades and he is not getting them. sure, his anger is going to be on David, but that's not the issue. The issue is he didn't get, right? And that's how it always is for us. It's not really, I mean, we like to pick on the other people that have it, but it's really because we didn't get it. Comparison makes us resentful because somebody else got something that I didn't get or that I wanted. Because his resentfulness is directed to God, and God hears it towards him. God hears our dissatisfaction with what we have as an indictment upon him for not providing what we want. It's more like I'm just unhappy with what you have because I didn't get it. And I resent that. Compared to what you have done, compared to what I have done, I should be able to have what you have. It's like we resent the goodness of God in the lives of others because we're not seeing it in our life. Look, when your kids are growing up, or maybe you've been to a birthday party with, you know, maybe 8, 10, 12 little kids, right? And one kid is getting gifts and opening them. And why? Because it's that kid's birthday. But as it goes, there's usually one or two kids there that are sad, down in the mouth, looking depressed. And you're like, what's wrong?
Well, I want presents.
You want to go, dude, it ain't your birthday. And we teach our kids, don't act that way, because like, that's socially really bad. Like, your birthday will come, but today's not that day. We're going to celebrate their birthday. But somehow, when we grow up in our relationship with God, we still do the same thing. We don't recognize it. It's a six-year-old's tantrum. God, how come I didn't get this? I'm comparing myself with everyone else, and I want. I know they got this, but I want it. And I can be resentful because I don't get what I want in life. My life isn't turning out like that person's life is. I didn't get a blessing like that person got. And we can become resentful about what God has given us and provided for us. You see, comparison makes us resentful even to God. Because when we compare, it makes us discontent. And when we compare, it makes us prideful. And when we compare, it makes us resentful. But there are some things that we can do to quit this comparing. So, since Jacob is not here today, I wanted to end the service differently than we have before. So instead of having the worship team come up and sing a song, I want to help you see what we can do to battle this comparing and how to quit it in our lives. And in order to do it, I want to read you a story. Okay? Now, for those of you that don't like stories, I don't care. And this story is not a true story, but it's true what it means. And so as I read this story, I want you just to try and put yourself in the place of this story. Because this story is called You Are Special by Max Lucado. The Wemics were small wooden people. And all the wooden people were carved by a woodworker named Eli. And his workshop sat on a hill overlooking their village. And each Wemic was different. Some had big noses, others had large eyes. Some were tall and others were short. Some wore hats and others wore coats. But all were made by the same carver and all lived in the village. And all day, every day, the Wemics did the same thing. They gave each other stickers. Each Wemics had a box of Golden Star stickers and a box of Gray Dot stickers. And up and down the streets and all over the city, people spent their days sticking stars or dots on one another. The pretty ones, those with smooth wood and fine paint, they always got stars. But if the wood was rough, ones got stars too, but some could lift big sticks high above their heads or jump over tall boxes, and still others knew big words or could sing pretty songs. And everyone gave them stars. Some Wemics had stars all over them. Every time they got a star, it made them feel so good. In fact, it made them want to do something else and then get another star.
Others, though, could do little. And they got dots. Punchinello was one of these. And he tried to jump high like the others, but he always fell. And when he fell, the others would gather around and give him dots. Sometimes when he fell, his wood got scratched, so people would give him more dots. Then he would try to explain why he fell. He'd say something silly, and the Weemix would give him more dots. And after a while, he had so many dots, he didn't want to go outside. He was afraid that he would do something dumb, such as forget his hat or step in water, and then people would give him another dot. In fact, he had so many great dots that some people would come up and give him one for no reason at all. But he deserves lots of dots. The wooden people would agree with one another. He's not a good wooden person. And after a while, Punchinello believed him. I'm not a good Weemix, he would say. The few times he went outside, he hung around other Weemix who had lots of dots. And he felt better around them. One day he met a Weemix who was unlike any he had ever met. She had no dots and no stars. She was just wooden. Her name was Lucia. It wasn't that people didn't try to give her stickers. It's just that the stickers didn't stick. Some of the Weemix admired Lucia for having no dots, and so they would run up and give her a star. It would fall off. And then others would look down on her for having no stars, and they would give her a dot. But it wouldn't stay either. That's the way I want to be, thought Punchinello. I don't want anyone's marks. We asked the stickerless Weemix how she did it. It's easy, Lucia replied. Every day I go see Eli. Eli? Yes, Eli, the woodcarver. I sit in the woodshop with him. Why? Well, why don't you find out for yourself? Go up the hill. He's there. And with that, the Weemix, who had no stickers, turned and skipped away. Punchinello went home, and he sat near a window, and he watched the wooden people as they scurried around giving each other stars and dots. It's not right, he muttered to himself. He decided to go see Eli. He walked up the narrow path to the top of the hill and stepped into the big shop. His wooden eyes widened at the size of everything. The stool was as tall as he was, and he had to stretch on his tippy toes to see the top of the workbench. A hammer was as long as his arm. Punchinello swallowed hard. I'm not staying here. And he turned to leave. And then he heard his name. Punchinello. And the voice was deep and strong. Punchinello stopped. Punchinello, how good to see you. Come and let me have a look at you. And Punchinello turned slowly. And he looked at the large bearded craftsman. You know my name? Little Weemix asked. Of course I do. I made you. And Eli stooped down and picked him up and set him on the bench. The maker spoke thoughtfully as he looked at the gray dots. Looks like you've been given some bad marks. Well, I didn't mean to, Eli. I really tried hard. You don't have to defend yourself to me, child. I don't care what the other Weemix think. Don't? No. You shouldn't either. Who are they to give stars or dots? They are Weemix, just like you. What they think doesn't matter, Punchinello. All that matters is what I think. And I think you're pretty special. Punchinello laughed. Me special? Why? I can't walk fast. I can't jump. My paint is peeling. Why do I matter to you? And Eli looked at Punchinello and put his hands on those small wooden shoulders and spoke very slowly. Because you are mine. That's why you matter to me. Punchinello had never had anyone look at him like this, much less his maker. He didn't even know what to say. Well, I came because I met someone who had no marks, said Punchline. Well, I know. She told me about you. Why don't the stickers stay on her? And the maker spoke softly. Because she's decided that what I think is more important than what they think. The stickers only stick if you let them.
What?
The stickers only stick if they matter to you. The more you trust my love, the less you care about their stickers. I am not sure I understand. Eli smiled. He said, you will, but it's going to take time. You've got a lot of marks. For now, just come see me every day and let me remind you how much I care. And Eli lifted Punchinello off the bench and set him on the ground. Remember, Eli said to the Weemic as he walked out the door. You were special because I made you. And I don't make mistakes. Punchinello did not stop. But in his heart, he thought, I think he really means it. And when he did, a dot fell to the ground. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. For we are God's masterpiece, and he has created us anew in Christ Jesus.